As spring makes its way into summer, there will be more outdoor festivals and concerts happening all around us. And if you're in the market for some new attire, let Tecovas help you out. A great pair of Western boots will elevate a casual look or add a refined flair that'll draw both eyes and compliments. I've seen some youngsters out there pull off wearing a nice pair of Tecovas ostrich boots with shorts. I've worn mine to a UFC event with a full suit head to toe. There is no limit to how you can wear a pair of boots, and the best way to shop for boots is at your local Tecovas store, where you're going to be greeted by the smell of fresh leather and a friendly smile. Go on in, grab a cold one, get fitted by a pro, and shop the latest styles. Tecovas also offers custom branding and leather stamping if you want to personalize your boots or fine leather goods. Visit Tecovas.com. That's Tecovas, TECOVAS.com. And don't go gently, y'all. I recently started taking Morning Kick, used and created by former karate champion Chuck Norris. Guys, I've never felt better. By the way, have you seen Chuck lately? It's like he's aging backwards. This guy is still throwing kicks. He's full of energy, and he's in his 80s. This is why I jumped at the shot of taking his revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions. This drink combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other greens out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade, and it has hundreds of five-star reviews. And by the way, I never tell you something tastes a certain way if it doesn't. It tastes just like strawberry lemonade. Since I started drinking Morning Kick, my digestion is smoother. My body looks leaner. I have energy all day. I just feel sharp. I want you to go to roundhouseprovisions.com/jail. Now, that's going to save you up to 44% off the regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost in energy, and just an overall healthier body, go to roundhouseprovisions.com/jail today. What's happening, guys? Happy Tuesday, and thank you for joining another special episode of Your Welcome. You know, I want to begin by apologizing for missing you all on Friday. I was in Paris, and I was with the family calling the Bellator fights, but I am back now, and I'm rearing to go for today's show. And you know what? Coming up, I saw someone say that Max Holloway is now the number one contender at 155 pounds, and I'm not sure how I feel about it. Plus, Conor McGregor training video has emerged. I'm going to tell you what I learned from watching those glorious 4 seconds. But before we get to all that, there was a big boxing fight over the weekend, and I think we should start there. Tyson Fury goes down to Usyk. Now, there's a number of times when you don't want to judge somebody, and you don't want your own words to be judged. But right after a sporting event, particularly combat, is one of them. Good or bad, right? Oh, I feel amazing. I want George St. Pierre next. It's like, no, I don't. Please don't give him forget that I said that. Right? I mean, you've seen those call-outs. But guys can also get jammed up for excuse-making, right? You remember one of the great ones. It was Mike Tyson. What did he say? He broke his back. His back was broken. It was spinal. But you remember that? It's still like a meme that goes around. And I'm only sharing that. I will not support and pile on something that somebody says right afterwards. I understand. Man, give them a day. Give them a minute. Give them some breathing room. Okay. However, I don't have a day. A hot story right now is Tyson Fury Usyk. And what Tyson Fury said right after is all the words we have to go on. So the best I can do for the Joker, for the Gypsy King, rather, is preface it with, he said it right after the fight. One thing, and I brought you guys this first, I brought you this over a month ago, as I told you, if you're handicapping and betting, if your bet is a decision, let me stop you right there. You do not now need to tell me who won the decision. I told you guys this over a month ago, it was 31 days to be exact, when I went and looked it up. When a guy represents a country who is at war and viewed by many to be the victim of the war. There is not a boxing council out there that's going to go against that guy. And this is all that I shared with you, and I left it at that. I knew that was a sensitive topic. I didn't want this whole big thing, but I did share with you. If you're betting and your prediction is a decision, stop. We do not now need to know unanimous, we don't need to know split, and we don't need to know anything to do with Tyson. If you believe as a bettor, it's going to go the distance. I get it. I get that I'm being redundant, but I said these exact words. And I said them because how could I possibly give Tyson a hard time when he came out and said them? And a lot of people were very bothered. And a lot of people were very bothered when I said them. But I also knew it to be true. Or at least I believed it to be true. And Tyson said this right after his fight with Usyk. He said the same thing that I said. His country is war. People are going to side with him. I thought I won the fight. I thought I won the fight is sportsmanship. Like, you're not going to get any nicer than that, right? I thought I won the fight. Didn't call for robbery. Didn't call for an injustice. Didn't call his opponent any names. Said it was a great fight. I mean, he furthered the thought. Said, man, he won a bunch of rounds, but I won a bunch as well. And I thought that I won more. He was hitting me, but boy, I was hitting him as well. Like, I appreciate those things. That's what I saw. And when you come down to a decision, and there was a little bit of a mix-up here for me, at least. Round number 10, I'm told, and this was in print everywhere, that Fury went down. Now, I can't confirm that for you. I watched what I was told was round number 10, and Fury did not go down. He was on ice skates, and he was stumbling, and he was getting crushed, and it might have been a 10-8 round even with him staying on his feet, but he didn't go down. And I was told that he did. Now, I don't need a correction from you in the comment section. Tell a story about myself here. I was in France. Now, there's something called a VPN. I use a VPN. One thing I don't know is how to change your location. And my life would be so much better if I did. Anderson Silva had a show that came out on Prime, but you could only watch it in Australia. If I could have changed my VPN and I was part of that show, I would have really liked to have seen it. I never got to see it. I didn't even tell you guys about it because there was no point in you knowing about it because you can't see it unless you know how to rig your VPN. My point being, in this particular case, I was in France. They wouldn't show the fight in France. So I didn't get to see Fury versus Usyk. I got to read along and then I got clips and captions on social media right after it happened. The round that I saw, that they labeled 10, and perhaps they were wrong. The round that I saw that they labeled 10, I did not see Fury go down. And I tell you that because if I were to judge that fight, I would have given it to Fury by a round. Now, if Fury went down, that would cross out my argument and that would make my scorecards a draw. I'm sharing this because Fury asked for a rematch. He said there's a clause in the contract to have a rematch. And that would certainly work. Now, a clause in the contract to have a rematch isn't worth a damn thing if it can't cover the spread. There's no promoter in the world that is going to write you a check because it's the right thing to do for our sport and our legal contract if the juxtaposition of that versus what he could expect a judge to say in a court of law, right? I mean, no contracts in fighting are worth a damn, right? No contract anywhere is worth a damn. It's only worth the guy's word that wrote it. And you're not going to put any faith in the guy, right? You're just not. So I'm telling you that because I do think they're going to get a rematch. I do think that that works. I do think that that sells. And I do think that that draws. But before we get there, what exactly is going on there with Fury? Right? Everybody gets beat eventually. Father Time, he's undefeated and all of these nice things. But boy, Fury is dog tough. They say the power is the last thing to go. There's no truth to that. They say it. They are stupid. But there is first things to go. There is a rhythm. There is a timing. None of those are gone. And the absolute number one thing that will be gone, because it's the absolute byproduct, there is no way around it. Like when you give the algorithm, the one that gets spit out the back end as you're slowing down, you're not working hard, you no longer have the eye of the tiger, is your conditioning. But Fury and Francis turned out to be one of the most surprising sporting events in history and the most surprising sporting event of my lifetime. But when Tyson found himself in a difficult contest, he never folded. He stayed out there the entire time. And if you go look at the Usyk fight, that was an additional 6 minutes in total. And he stood out there the entire time. Fury did. And this is after being hurt 30 minutes in. 36 minutes in, he's still swinging. So I'm only sharing for you, like, that eye of the tiger is still there. Those athletic skills are still there. The first thing to go is your conditioning. The first visible thing to go is your conditioning. And it went because of the other things. They're already gone. That will be the test. And he's still passing it. He's still looking good. He could beat Usyk. I think he did beat Usyk. But Usyk can beat him as well. And Usyk deserves his credit. And I don't want to take away from it. And the kid giving me the feed that I'm getting through on TikTok said that he went down in the 10th round. I don't think that kid's right. I don't know. I don't think that Fury went down. Now, when you look at this and you look to move ahead, there is a big question of, am I right that that's the one that brings in the money? Is that the box office? Because there's an insertion somewhere of Anthony Joshua, who is a very popular guy and who gets to ride a real momentum due to the Francis fight. Even though nobody watched it, that momentum is still there, even just when you hear and read about it. But if you could not insert one of those two, and Francis Ngannou claims that he's getting a rematch with Fury, win, lose, or draw against Usyk. That's Fury versus Usyk. Oh, and Francis, by the way, versus Joshua. According to Francis, before those fights, regardless of outcome, he and Fury are going to fight again. If there ever was a time that you would put Francis and Fury, and I'm not sure that there is, but I'm sharing for you, if there ever is a time, it'd be right now. It'd be when Fury is coming off of a loss. Go out there, you have those two guys do whatever it is they're going to do. And then you would bring Fury back in for the Usyk fight, at least in theory, right? Boxing matchmaking can be tough. But Fury did make a comment, and he did say that a decision wasn't going to go to his way, and he brought in geopolitical reasons. And a lot of people are upset with Fury, but it's the same thing I said 31 days ago. I was right when I said it, and Fury's right now. John Jones and Tom Aspinall. Now, I gotta tell you guys, I can't make any money on this topic. I've come at it every different possible way, including there's something in the business that I'm in right here that you guys like. You just don't know that you like it. But one of the numbers and traits that I look for and I look to exploit is when I can personalize something, right? I read Tom Aspinall said, go from there. Well, to personalize it would be, I was speaking to Tom Aspinall and Tom told me, right now it's called personalizing. So I talked to Aspinall, I talked to Jones. I talk about Aspinall, I talk to Jones. I talk about Aspinall calling out Jones through the media that I read somewhere. I talk about Jones responding to Aspinall through the media that I read somewhere. I can't make any money on this. I cannot get people to be interested. And I've tried to figure out why. Because the law of supply and demand, like if you think you're an economics expert and you went and got a PhD, you wasted your entire life. Okay, 15 minutes, I can explain all economics to you. And I do mean all of them. Supply and demand. The end, get up and walk out. Now, the reason I tell you that is it's a very real concept. And John Jones is prospering at this point in his career from that. I mean, John Jones popped his head in one time in 4 years. Oh, that can't be true. Yes, that was March of last year. Oh my goodness. John Jones won the heavyweight championship in March of last year. I didn't realize that. I did not realize that. And he'd sat for 3 years going into that. Wow. So one time in 4 years, John dipped his toe in the pool. Oh, by the way, weight class he'd never been, wins the world championship, never gets hit, out of there into the showers before he could break sweat in less than 5 minutes. Right? I mean, in any way that you possibly want to cut up the laws of supply and demand, John is benefiting from that. Now you have Tom, and people love to tell me that Tom isn't a draw. Now, that's fair. Go ahead. Like, you're not insulting Tom by saying that. That's a real truth to an extent. Everybody's working towards that, and you're never there until you're there. Leon Edwards would be a fine example, but his star has absolutely skyrocketed, right? Just for example, he wasn't there until he's there. He's not doing anything different. He's not calling himself something different. He's not acting different, behaving different, training with different people. It just, sometimes it takes a minute. Now, I don't buy the Tom isn't to draw a narrative completely, because I've seen him fight at home on two separate occasions and it was sold out and he was the main event. Now, he did have the benefit all the way down from Molly to Patty, even Drake weighed in on it. But he was still the main event, and he still gets the credit. Then we bring him across the pond. We put him at Madison Square Garden, and it's an absolutely sold-out event, of which he was a feature match. I mean, in many ways, he was the feature match. And even if that came together very late, that parody and newness of Tom having the courage to step forward and take on Sergey, right? Sergey Pavlovich was the one that was going to make John Jones quit. He was the one. That was the boogie monster in the closet. Just to remind you of that time frame. And even if they came in late, they got so much media and attention. I don't think that it's accurate to say that Tom didn't have an active participation in that. Thus, I don't think that it's fair and accurate to say Tom's not a draw. Now, why do I tell you that? Because if I got one guy that's a star, I don't even need the other guy. That's very rare. In the history of boxing, there was only two athletes, Oscar De La Hoya and Mike Tyson, that could draw on their own. In the history, even Muhammad Ali could not draw. He needed to have an opponent. Now, I think you need to amend that list to add Floyd Mayweather. And I think in MMA, you would amend that list and you would put forth Conor McGregor. And the reason I'm sharing that with you is I got two guys that are good, solid draws. But I got John Jones, right? The greatest talent, and you decide how you want to finish that. Of his era, of current time, of all time, like, you decide how you want to finish it. But even a great hater is going to agree you can start the sentence with that, right? John Jones's greatest hater is not going to be able to deny that the sentence starts with John Jones, greatest of. Debate's just on how you finish it. Then you have Aspinall, who appears to be the future. I think that Aspinall is England's biggest star. Now, that's a crown that Michael Bisping held, and he held alone for a meaningful amount of time. Then Dan Hardy came in and all of a sudden was getting a little bit of shine with that. I get how good Leon is, but the rest of the world doesn't fully. Right? Like, we're just kind of starting to understand, wow, about Leon. And I share that with you because I do think that Tom is England's biggest star, but there's still something about Tom versus John, and there's a miss. Where I come back to, I can't make any money with it. What does that mean when I say it? It means I can't get you guys interested. I can't get you to click. Get paid on clicks over here. Get paid on engagements. I can't get thumbs up, thumbs down. I can't get comments. There's something about that. And for me, what's more interesting right now is trying to figure out what that something is. I love to break down the different aspects of the business, which is nothing more than psychology of the fan. That's it. So to build an anticipation, which is the only way you can make money over here, you must first satisfy the psychology of the fan, and you guys are missing something. What is it? Now, between John Jones and Tom, I have missed, and I've looked for this. I've been looking and thought maybe it was somewhere. I asked my buddy Ryan. I go to our production team. I got Ethan on the phone over here. Was there an official call out? I trust that there was. But I didn't see it. And I don't think there'd be any reason to believe that John Jones had done it, and I missed it. It would have had to have been done by Tom, who has made it very clear that he believes he should fight John, that he believed the night that he won the interim championship, it signified and meant that he was fighting John. All sorts of Tom Aspinall discussions and conversations about he and John. But did he ever officially challenge John? I didn't see it. And I bring that because it does change. It is meaningfully different. If you were to try to tell the story right now that John Jones has refused the challenge of Tom Aspinall, I could not tell you you're right. I didn't see it. If you wanted to say he isn't interested in the match, he's going to retire before the match. If you want to say he's giving him a stiff arm, because he's promoting and he's trolling, he's going, you go right ahead. But for John Jones to have turned down the challenge, guys, I don't remember when he was challenged. And I was one of the first people to talk to Tom. In that regard, I can personalize it because he came right up to the set of ESPN, of which I happen to be. And he thought he was fighting John. He thought that's exactly what it meant. He didn't know if that was going to be after Stipe, or maybe Stipe doesn't get in there and they redo it to John. Now that you've got this new interim business, which was not part of the story one day prior. It was a foregone conclusion, but I'm not asking about that, guys. I'm not asking, did he assume? I'm not asking if he's right or wrong to assume. I'm asking, did he challenge John? And I don't remember that. And I just see it as such an opportunity, right? And this is me. This is the troll in me. I never got called a troll in my whole life, but I also didn't do the sport at a time when that was a word. Okay, I didn't really even know what that meant. He's trolling. And I share that with you because it would be looked at and perceived that John Jones is here and Tom is here. And it would be looked at and perceived that because the undisputed belt being higher than the interim belt. And when I share with you it's an opportunity, it is an opportunity. John Jones won a lot of things. He hadn't won an interim championship. John Jones is a lot of things. He isn't the interim champion. Now, does that interest him at all? Is that silly? I don't know. That's why I admitted that it was a troll job. But what I'm sharing with you is Tom perhaps, and Tom's a true martial artist, right? He's got his own father in his corner, right? I mean, that is very much, that's a martial artist. We've only got two guys whose father's in their corner. We got Stephen Thompson, we got Tom Aspinall. True martial artist. So see, a true martial artist would not bend or break the rule that Undisputed is here and I am therefore here. So I have to take what I can get from him. And I offer, when it's a troll job, that Tom offered to put up his belt. He offered to put up his championship. He offered John a shot at his championship. It's not like that isn't anything. It is something. It was a day of celebration for Curtis Blaydes. Well, why? Curtis has been England. He's been a main event. He's fought Tom. He didn't celebrate any of those. Why was it a day in the Blaydes' house to celebrate? Because the title's on the line. It is a title. It is a very real title. I don't know where that's going to get him. I don't know if that's going to get him the belt, but I feel as though Tom has missed something. I will put this on Tom, not John. I blame Tom. But what am I blaming Tom for? And I believe the story lacks one thing, an official challenge. Guys, when I started podcasting, an online store was the furthest thing on my mind. But now, we're selling Bad Guy Inc. merchandise. That includes coffee. That includes t-shirts. Go get yourself a sticker if you would like. And you know what? It's very easy. And that's all because we use Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you to sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's where you go to help your business grow. Whether you're auctioning off autographed apparel or selling custom accessories, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person point-of-sale system, whenever and wherever you're selling from, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers and the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort. Thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I appreciate about Shopify is no matter how big you grow, you don't have to feel overwhelmed by the demand. Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level with ease. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/chail, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/chail right now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/chail. Summer is coming up, and that might mean that you're going to have a little more time on your hands. Why not use it to learn a new language? Rosetta Stone, the most trusted language learning program that truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, is here to help you. Some of you may be traveling abroad this summer, and you might want to experience that country beyond just the touristy type spots. Your experience could be upgraded just by learning the native language. Now you can download the Rosetta Stone app to your phone or tablet and learn on the go while driving, riding on the subway, running on a treadmill, or even laying poolside with just a 10-minute lesson per day. Rosetta Stone's lessons are designed for long-term retention of language skills rather than short-term memorization. The focus of the program is preparing you for real, authentic conversations, not just knowing a couple of translations. It's like having your own personal trainer for language learning. Rosetta Stone has been used by millions of people for over 3 decades. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started for a limited time. My listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off. Unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. That's a steal. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today. After years of fine print contract and getting ripped off by overpriced wireless providers, if I have learned anything, it's that there's always a catch. So when I heard that for a limited time, all Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan, I thought, what's the catch? But after talking to them, it all made sense. Guys, there isn't one. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online. They don't have retail stores or salespeople. Instead, they deliver premium phone plans directly to you. I honestly thought the plans and pricing were too good to be true. I'm thankful I was wrong. The coverage and reliability with Mint Mobile has been superb. Say bye-bye to overpriced wireless plans, jaw-dropping monthly bills, and unexpected overages. Mint Mobile is here to rescue you with premium wireless plans starting at $15 a month. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts. Ditch overpriced wireless with Mint Mobile's limited time deal and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month. To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/chale. That's mintmobile.com/chale. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/chale. $45 up front, payment required equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details. Oh, there's a clip going around. Conor McGregor. 4 seconds of footage, 2 seconds, sparring footage. There's a clip going around. What can you get, if anything, from 4 seconds, just possibly 2 seconds, of sparring footage? What can you get? Can you get anything? Well, I feel like you can. I feel like you can. I feel like the expression, a picture is worth 1,000 words, I think it's true. So imagine if I have a video, right? So the first thing I'm going to be looking for is sweat. Whenever I see these videos, I'm looking for sweat. And even if it's 3 or 4 seconds, I'm looking for sweat. And then I'm looking for the way that he's breathing. And I'm only doing that to authenticate the video. Most are phonies. I give a hard time to Anthony Joshua. Anthony Joshua puts out phony training videos constantly, but he gives himself up to their phony videos because he forgets to splash water on himself. So it's always like what we call a hero show. Like it's him in the gym, you know, and he's got this perfect shadow and perfect lighting. And he's wrapping his hands. And so it's like him standing there and this wrap is coming down. But that tells a story, that tells an entire story that this athlete, Anthony Joshua, is getting ready to do a workout in the pugilistic science of boxing. Like it tells a story. It's well done. They just forget to splash water. So when he's taking the gloves off because the workout is done, he's putting the bag aside, the coach is there, spraying the water in his mouth. They forget to soak him. And I say that because I get a lot from a training footage. There's things that I want to look for. Like the Mike Tyson ones are highly problematic because he's wearing blue underwear. Not shorts, he's wearing blue underwear. Well, those stand out. It's actually a very pretty color of blue. I'm colorblind and even I can see it's a nice soft blue. But he's in underwear, not shorts. That's weird. Okay, fine. Do weird stuff in the sport all the time. But because it's a soft blue underwear, I remember that footage from 3 years ago when they were building up to his fight with Roy Jones. So now they're building up to his fight with Jake Paul and they're putting out the same footage of Tyson in these extremely unique blue underwear. You realize you're watching old training footage and it's just a problem. That's all I share for you. It's a problem. So when I see the 4 seconds of Conor McGregor, I can tell that a round is going on. And I can also tell by how hard Conor hit his opponent that they are actually sparring. There is nobody that is going to give up their body to let you do this so you can size it right. Conor's only got one setup to that left hand. He's got two ways that he throws it and he's only got one setup. It's always the same setup. And I share that because why are they boxing? Conor looked good. That one setup, by the way, is a massive timing issue. You cannot have that timing unless you're actively in the gym. That's good news for Team McGregor. The fact that he's getting that hard sparring, these things are very positive. The fact that he's in a boxing ring, boxing with boxing equipment on, for me is a problem. I lived that life. Man, I lived that life. And it's a mistake. There was never a time in my career where I could get that down. I would always go back, and even if I was doing it on the other end, where I would go into a wrestling room. I'd go and wrestle with the kids, and I'd wrestle with the colleges, and I'd wrestle with the high school, or I'd catch a training camp during the summertime, whatever it was, and I would go back to that wrestling. And when I got done with that, it was the most difficult thing, keeping up with these kids, all the conditioning, running the stadium stairs, and doing the whole bit. As difficult as that was because of the shape I was in, which was MMA shape, like it was this extra difficult. When I came out of it, I was the most out-of-shape MMA guy in the room. That wrestling conditioning didn't carry over. And bending your knees and getting in that posture as opposed to an upright posture. And no matter how many times over my career, I reminded myself, 22-year career, I reminded myself, that's not helpful. Don't go do that anymore. Do not put wrestling shoes on and bend your knees and do anything. Don't drill that way. Don't go lie. It was one of these things, and I'd always forget. And then I'd also want to go and specialize and really focus on my hands. So I would go in and do boxing. And it was a massive mistake. It did not carry over and translate. And the only thing that did is when you put on the actual gloves that you're doing and you went in and you sparred. It was the only thing that translated and carried over. And believe me, I would break it down even further, right? Like I'm a really hard guy to teach things to. I would go in and do just jiu-jitsu. I would even have the gi on. It did not translate to MMA grappling. And you can have those days. You can have this is boxing day. And that's perhaps what this clip was of Conor. You can. But it was in a ring. It was in a boxing ring. Which makes me believe he was at a boxing gym. I could have that wrong. I haven't been to Straight Blast Gym, Ireland. I don't know that they don't have a boxing ring in one of the corners. But I don't think they do. I don't think it'd be advantageous. I don't think it would make sense to do that. If you're a mixed martial arts gym that takes place inside of a cage. So, that part would be concerning for me. Is Chandler bound to throw? Yes. Are you bound to do your one and only setup? Yes. Are you going to throw a straight down the middle, followed up by a body shot with the opposite? Like, yeah, all of those things are true, but how much time are you spending in there? And a great reminder of this just was Conor when he came out of boxing. And oh my God, that guy looks so great. He just did 30 minutes with Floyd Mayweather. And the very next fight he gets into, he gets knocked down by a guy who had never knocked anybody down before. It's just, it's one of those things. It's absolute proof. And I'm aware that Khabib caught him. Don't think I didn't watch the fight and know all about this. I'm aware that some of you just call it not a knockdown. I mean, believe me, I know the whole thing. I don't need a history lesson given to the comment section. He got outstruck by Khabib, who had never outstruck anybody at that point, right? I mean, this was the one thing that we knew was not going to happen because Conor had just come out of a pugilistic camp, but it's completely different. The setups are completely different. The timing is completely different. The gloves are completely different. If you ever, most of you have never tried to hit a heavy bag, but you have an idea in your mind, right? Almost every man has an idea in his mind of what he would do in a certain situation. Then you can fill in the blank. Somebody pulls a gun. Somebody threatens my family. Somebody, like, you can fill in the blank. And most every guy will die having that same opinion of himself because it will never actually get tested. Like what you would do in the bravado that you walk around society is it's whatever you think. It's whatever you thought in your head for 99% of men. Well, less than 1% will ever actually be tested. They'll ever actually be in a situation where they need to defend themselves, their property, or their family. So it's largely just, what do you think? And I share that with you because if you go out and you try to hit a heavy bag right now, you see the heavy bag and you go to punch it, most of you, or at least a large percentage, will miss. That heavy bag right there in front of you that isn't moving and isn't going anywhere, if you've never hit one before, and you go up for this to be your first strike, will miss. And you might come up just short, just a little, but you'll miss. And now if you give that thing a push and it's swinging, great, big, dumb, heavy bit of swing, slow, it's swinging slow. And now you got to hit it. You got to time that somewhere in there and throw a hand out and hit it. You'll miss. And I share that with you because it's not a normal thing to do. And once you become excellent, once you become an amateur, you work your way up. Now you're working out every day. Maybe you even become a professional. If I put a different glove on you, you may not miss, but you will not hit it where you want to. You hear about keep it at the end of your punches. If I go put a big glove on you, no matter how trained you are, if you haven't trained specifically in that glove, you are likely to miss. Even if you connect, right? I'm calling it miss because you missed the shot that you wanted. What you set out to do, you are very likely to fail. And then once you get it down in those big gloves and I go put a little glove on you, you are very likely to go in and, want to fill it very for me? Miss. That's right. So maybe it's an off day. Maybe catch a little sparring in there. Maybe. But maybe not. Maybe he thinks I got the wrestling handled and now I got to work on the such and such for Chandler. Not to mention, if you want to go some real power and you really want to let those hands go, which there's a time and a place to do that. And if you're going to do that, you need to be bundled up like Connor was. You'd have the headgear on, a big ridiculous cup that covers your abdomen. If you ever see those boxing cups, those weird that come over the trip, they come way up. It's not just to protect the twig and berries. Like that can be done in a variety of ways. It's got an abdomen. Check on there. That's where the real body comes to your bone, coming to your liver, bone, coming on the inside. Great gloves, great protection. Maybe that's what Connor was after. And the harder you can go, at least from a cardio standpoint, the more you can get revved up. I'll tell you a quick story and I'm getting out, but Evan Tanner, the late great. But Evan Tanner came to town and he knew the less gear we put on to resemble an MMA fight. The more it resembles an MMA fight, the more it resembles us with mouthpieces, small gloves, and short pants on, and that's the only thing we're wearing, the less you can do to resemble the MMA fight, right? The more it resembles it, the less you can do to resemble it. But the more you can make it not look like an MMA fight, meaning you're out there like a football player wearing Kevlar and headgear, you can then go full bore. And Evan Tanner had this suit, and it was a catcher. It's what the umpires would wear. You know, the catcher wears something, but then the umpire wears it. It's got this vest protection. And it's got the full headgear. And he would go in, and he would have this great big bag. Rest his soul. He'd have this great big bag. This is right when he gets here from Amarillo. And it was like what you'd have a hockey bag, just ridiculous looking. He'd empty it all out. It was only enough for him and one partner. And he'd come in all the time and he'd want us to put this on because then you can fight to the death. This is what he would actually call you. You could do anything you wanted. You could punch and kick and spin this way and you could elbow and you could headbutt the guy, which at the time I met Evan was still legal in many jurisdictions. And of all those days that the late great Evan brought it in, he only got one guy to ever put it on. That one guy was Randy Couture. And if you're wondering how that story ends, there's one guy that you don't want to go full bore with, no matter how much padding you're wearing. Which I believe is why Evan never got that hockey bag back out. But that one guy is Randy Couture. All right, Ian Gary has spoken up. He says that he accepted a fight with Venom Page. By the way, do you guys ever try this? You know what this is? A new Jocko drink? But it's called Blue Raspberry. Is that real? Is there such a thing? My uncle was a farmer. We did not have this. He had all sorts of berries. He had huckleberries and marionberries. We had wild berries, we had strawberries, we even had raspberries, but I never had a blueberry. And it's not as though Jocko's the first to come up with this. Like, there's other there's things you can go with. There's ice cream flavored that are blue raspberry. There's yogurts that are flavored blue. I'm asking a serious question. Is there such a thing? Can you get a blue raspberry somewhere? I feel like, as a world traveler, not to mention the nephew of a farm. My uncle's still got the farm. He's still got all these berries I'm telling you about. Don't have any blue ones that are called raspberries. Answer that question for me, would you? Now,
does it taste good?
Yeah, it tastes very good. But but all blue raspberry, like the ice cream and the yogurt, is also very good. Like, there's something to a blue raspberry. But if they don't actually come in blue, then how would it be blue? That's the part that's weird. Like, sandwiches don't come in blue. And if I had one and it was a sandwich and it was blue, I'm probably not going to eat it. All right. The topic today is Ian Gary claiming he accepted Michael Venom Page. Now, I don't say claiming as though I'm calling Ian Gary out. I'm saying it because there is a vernacular within this industry that has been greatly corrupted over time. So, Ian Gary's statement, I have accepted Michael Venom Page. And he's talking about June 29th, International Fight Weekend, what would possibly be a co-main event, and the return of Michael Chandler, also known as the return of Conor McGregor. But if you're going to say I've accepted, you had to be offered him. And I'm only saying this because there's a lot of guys that are out there and they're banging their chest and they're trying to get bravado for accepting certain fights. I appreciate that. I think you should get credit. But we can't just start throwing this term out because your coach asked you a question. Because your manager sent you a text message. Hey, would you fight? And you text the manager back. And then you go to the meeting. I accepted MVP. It's like, well, you didn't accept him, but you also didn't turn him down if you were never offered him. And we just have to clear that up in our industry because there's a number of words that are getting away from us. There's a number of words and terms and a number one contender and a top ranked guy, and a champion. What is the interim champion? Like, there's a lot of words that are being corrupted. And if Ian Gary says that he accepted MVP, that means that MVP was offered to him. If MVP was offered to Ian Gary, that would lead us to believe, without specific proof, it would lead us to believe that MVP, who was cited as having the most boring fight of UFC 299, I don't agree. I do not agree at all. I thought Kevin Holland versus MVP was awesome, but it's still cited. And it is still stated that you're going to go from what they're calling the most boring fight to a co-main event of the Michael Chandler, Conor McGregor card. That is an amazing leap for me to make. Not to mention, you got Ian Gary that's got a great big shelf life, and you got MVP who's as scary as the day is long, but he's long in the tooth age-wise. You are not short, put it to you this way, I'll just talk to you real quick. You're not positive Ian Gary's going to beat him. So now you're taking a feature spot and you're giving it potentially to a guy who's going to get over on potentially your future of the next 10 years. The next decade, if things go well for Ian Gary, the next decade, Ian Gary is still open and optimistic to the chance of becoming the face of the company. Major compliment. Right? You got Conor McGregor in there right now taking it, but Conor's not making that walk. Skill-wise, you give it to John Jones, but he's been out there one time in the last 4 years. Popularity-wise, that looks like that's being gobbled up by Sugar Sean, but Max Holloway has currently re-emerged and asserted himself. Like, it's one of these very coveted positions. And if you, I like the fight. I think that's a close fight. I think that's a very interesting match. Ian Gary, as great as he is, has exclusively displayed that greatness in stand-up. And the thought of having to stand with and then the belief that you could get over on MVP. And MVP's first fight is going to be his worst fight, and that happens to be his last fight. Everybody's debut in the octagon is their worst. Again, there's no way to know that, and that's a broad stroke, but please understand my point. So if MVP on a bad day can still get over on Holland, then you're telling me that you believe that Gary could beat Holland. Okay, fine. If those were to be booked, Gary would be the favorite. But now it's not, I apologize, but now you're starting to see where, but this is an even better, this is an even bigger step up, right? So Gary, to turn down MVP, had to have been offered MVP. And I don't believe that that happened. I don't believe he got offered MVP for the reasons that I just stated. Right or wrong, and for better or worse, MVP's last fight was not revered by the critics. MVP is a top guy, and he is that's the biggest pain in the ass you've got in the division. You would be better off to fight Leon than you would to fight MVP. You're not going to beat either one of them, but only one of them's going to change your life. You're not getting your hand raised against either, but Leon's not against taking you down, passing, and tapping you out. MVP is going to bludgeon you, and all of you. Not one shot. Nope. He's going to break your feet, and then he's going to work his way up from there. He's going to hurt your shins. He's going to hurt your knees. He's going to bust up your thigh. He's going to split up your ribs, come to your chest before he gets his way up to your jaw and orbital. That's just the way he fights. It's a wildly difficult person to get an opponent for. So Ian Gary versus MVP, wow, I would really love that. And Ian Gary says that it's been offered, but that he's not sure that MVP will accept, because MVP would have to get his weight down in only 7 weeks. Now, I mean, I got to tell you, like, that isn't MVP making the excuse. That was Gary making a suggestion. But 7 weeks to get your weight down? Kayla Harrison hasn't weighed less than 145 pounds since she was 17 years old. In 9 weeks, she got down to 135. So I'm not signing off on the excuse, but at the same time, MVP didn't offer it. It was just Ian Gary speaking to say, hey, you know, that's not a lot of time for him. I would understand if he didn't do it. But I got to go a step further. But before we get to that, and before we decide that Gary is fighting on the 29th of June and is potentially fighting MVP, we have to make sure we trace back this statement to its origin. And before you can accept a fight or you can deny a fight, you have to first be offered the fight, and not by your coach and not by your manager, by the company. And I wasn't there. I'm looking for information. I admit that. But I will tell you that right now, I don't believe that happened. Jesse Holland had put out an article, and I got to preface that because I don't know if he ever gets them right or if he even tries. But he put out an article, and he said that Max Holloway is in the running for the next 155-pound title shot. Now, do any of us believe that that's true? And I'm trying to make a case for Jesse. Because Max at 155... I mean, the winner of Max versus Justin at 155, we have long believed, would be on the very short list for title fights at 155. Now, Sarkarian is the number one contender, and it's been advertised and revealed to all of us that he will be next for the winner of Islam versus Poirier. That's been revealed to us. And you then also have illness, injury, which could create a quick change. So I'm trying to make Jesse right. Like I'm trying to create a scenario where Jesse's right, that Max is on a short list. And for it to be true, we would have to remove Sarkarian. But again, that's possible to do. Sure it is. And Sarkarian was already offered this fight. It doesn't matter why he's not there. Either way, he's not there. So of course it's possible for us to make a case. So if we're making Jesse right after Sarkarian, who else would you say has a better chance or more of a right? Or who is more realistic to get the nod? And I don't know that you would have an answer. I think it'd be a very bad situation if Armin Sarkarian did not answer and be able to do it. But you would now be making a trade, right? If you put Max in at 155, any way that you do it, you're making a trade. You're costing yourself a title fight at 145 to have a fight at 155 for a guy who has shown no interest in 155 and a full interest in going back to 145. That's where it becomes a little bit tough. But we do have these delays, and you have to wonder why. Like things are being done different today than they were being done 10 years ago, right? We had one thing from 2023 that I hope we don't revisit again, which is multiple number one contenders at the same time at the same weight class. I personally do not want to see a logjam of number one contenders, because what it does is it stops our ability to speculate what the next number one contenders match is, and that's a lot of fun. Oh my gosh, we got X and Y, and the winner of that, they got to be next for a title. Like, that's a lot of fun. When you get logjam there, and you're 12 months out just for an opportunity. I just personally don't enjoy that. And another thing that's happening now that we didn't see 10 years ago is where guys want to fight each other, where they call each other out. Right? You got three people to make the fight. You got the promotion, you got the red corner, you got the blue corner. So when red corner and blue comer come to the table first, generally it's done the other way. Promotion comes with the idea, makes the phone calls. When you have red corner, blue corner that find each other and agree, particularly publicly, it just makes your job a lot easier, and it gets signed off on, and off we go. But lately, even when it's signed off on, we don't go. We do not get notified. So I bring that to you because maybe the fight is done. Maybe Topuria versus Max is, in fact, done. But according to Jesse, Max is still a leading candidate at 155 pounds. So does Jesse, for the first time in his life, know something that the rest of us don't? Like, does Jesse, for the first time in his life, have information that wasn't first revealed to the public through a forum known as the Underground? It'd be hard to imagine. It'd be hard to imagine that that's somebody's trusted confidant and or source, but it doesn't make it impossible. So is there something to be revealed there? Because then you have clickbait as well. That's really not that interesting of clickbait.
Max Holloway, a leading candidate, 155 for a title shot somewhere in the future, yet to be disclosed against an opponent that we have no idea because 303 is still coming up.
It's really not that good of clickbait either. So what am I supposed to make of that? And where would you rather see Max? Because we've all loved the idea of Max at 155, and I'll put myself in that wee category. I have had a lot of fun with that. But Max doesn't want to do it. I mean, that's not a maybe. Max has never wanted to do it. Anybody that would listen, he's going back to 45. I mean, anyone that would listen. Now he goes up, he wins a title. Oh, by the way, the greatest fight on the greatest fight card in history. Oh, by the way, maybe the most talked about fight after the fact that we've ever seen in mixed martial arts. It would still be second, wouldn't it? Forrest and Bonner would be the most talked about fight after the fight happened in the history of our sport. But wouldn't Max and Justin be number two? It's an interesting concept. It's very interesting. How bad we want Max at 155? How bad we like the parity? We like the opportunity there. But he doesn't. He wants to go to 45. And they happen to have a champion down there who became champion by being a number one contender, became number one contender the one way that they hadn't done in the modern era, which is to not have a path that avoids Max. So it's one of those spots, right? Like, what if Volkanovski and Topuria is the one that they're coming back to? What if they're doing that? And all of a sudden you got Max floating around, who on accident is now possibly your biggest star. Like, what do you do then? Do you move him to 55? Do you tell Sakarian, sorry, here's your hat, what's your hurry? It's an interesting question. Now, this entire Jenga board gets pulled out and falls down if Jesse is wrong and Max is not a leading candidate. If he made that up, which would not be unlike things he's done in the past. But if he's telling the truth, if he has an actual source, and that piece of the story is accurate, the what-ifs do come into play. And the what-ifs that would surround that are a lot of fun. Everybody, that's it for today's episode. Thank you for listening. And I want to remind everyone listening that if you want to continue to make this program the number one program in all of combat sports, then I urge you to hit the follow button wherever you do your listening. It helps more than you know. I'm going to be back on Friday, folks. Until then, I'm Chael Sonnen, and you are welcome.